Welcome to the Minivay Gang Podcast, episode 329. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Jello.
And our very special guest host, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Buenos dias.
How are you guys doing this morning?
That's some peppy music.
It is peppy. Well, that's why I chose it. I actually had something totally different that was much more moody and all that, but I chose it last evening. So, of course, I was a little more moody and mellow at that point. Now I'm a little more jazz.
It didn't sound as good a quality as you usually have. Is it a different source that you're using?
No. Okay. No, same source.
Interesting.
Maybe I didn't have it quite as loud or something. I don't know.
Perhaps it's my side. You know, it could be my fault. You never know.
Yeah. Yep. So
yep.
I had a client deadline that I was sad that I couldn't go down and stand next to my buddy Phil Wilson at Mini Demo.
Well, actually, you would have sit next to me, but that's okay.
Oh, okay. And then, Julio, you were there, right?
Yeah, I was at Mini Demo and also at Beta, man.
Yep. And
so
let's hear what happened.
There were demos at both events, as a matter of fact.
Like on technology or something?
I think so.
All right,
come on,
spill the beans. Let's go.
No, Mini Demo was another. I thought it was another great event. Some more established companies, I thought, but didn't you think so too, Julio? Just guys that have been around for a while, like HomeSpotter, which used to be Mobile Realty Apps.
Yeah, the mix at Beta Man was a little more interesting to me. Although there were more companies at Mini Demo that I had not heard about than at Beta Man. Many of the presenters at Beta Man I had already written about.
Right.
But what I found interesting, and which I detailed in a post that I just put up, is that I thought the character of each event was very interesting. Beta Man is similar to these CES side events where you go into a big room and each company's at a table and you walk from table to table or station to station and talk to the people. That's very useful. Mini Demo is a different animal. People are doing demos up on the review theater stage. Completely different. You don't get to interact directly with the companies, but that has its own charm because, there are snafus and, people doing wacky things like playing electric guitars and I'm just back from vacation and kind of raring to go, and it was fun that these events were all on the same week, and I just had a blast, and there was beer,
and there was beer,
and you got to meet the demo goddess,
yeah, Lori Erickson. Yeah. I worship the ground she walked upon.
Well, there you go. Well, yeah, I think that I agree with you, Julio, and I think it was best exemplified by our mutual friend Chuck Olson's comment that beta.mn is kind of more science fairy, so it's like,
Yeah, that's a good point.
You're at a science fair, you're talking about your products and you're answering questions and things like that. So yeah, I think it's great.
And by the way, the aforementioned demo goddess, for people who don't know who we're talking about, Lori Erickson, who's not very techie, but she's Chuck Olson's wife, and she was there capably, enthusiastically helping her husband, and I was most impressed.
Oh, so it was a good time. It was a great time. I really enjoyed both events. I felt like Mini Demo was a little bit more established companies. I kind of wonder if do we need to back off on the Mini Demos and maybe do fewer of them so we have a chance for newer products to come to light or that sort of a thing or not. But it was still always great to see everybody and get together, and I thought it was really well put together.
And Mini Demo, I don't want to necessarily say it's a tired format, but I've seen a lot of them, and Beta, and man, at least from my vantage point, it was a little shinier and newer. I had never been to anything like that here in the Twin Cities. The setting at Target Commons was spectacular, and I just had a blast.
Well, don't you think too that isn't it great to be able to walk around from station to station and actually talk to people?
Yeah, you can take your own time. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I think that there's value in both of them. I really do.
Right.
I would agree with Julio on that point that I think they each have their place. And I mean, clearly, Mini Demo is a more of a show. You know, there's a there's the mixing beforehand, mixing afterwards, and but then there's the show in the middle. Whereas it's all combined at beta.mn.
Yep, you did a great post, Julio. Big fun at beta.mn and Mini Demo, and we'll put a link in the show notes to that. Good article from Lee Schaefer in the Star Tribune too, where he did one on life in a startup is difficult and fun. Talked about beta.mn 2.5. Well, and
I thought, I think we should probably talk a little bit about beta.mn and how they have that coin system where you can vote on your favorites.
Yeah.
And so I did find out, you were telling me yesterday, I think, Julio, that it was Woodchuck that actually won the fan favorite thing.
Yeah, Woodchuck won the coin voting. Although another company at beta.mn, Astro HQ, which makes software that turns an iPad into a high-end graphics tablet, they were there and they got the last laugh because, as we'll discuss later, they won the Minnesota Cup.
Right, exactly. So, but I think that's interesting in a whole bunch of technology, focused startups and companies, that Woodchuck, which is, they basically make wooden accessories, was the one that won that particular event.
Well, so
that,
I'm gonna jump in and defend Woodchuck because I've written about them. They are a tech startup in the sense that they, like many other companies like InCase, make very sophisticated high-end accessories for technology devices like iPhones, and so they're in a sense tech startups in their own right, and their processes and technologies and how they go about it is extreme. I've been to their headquarters, and what they do is extremely sophisticated. It's not easy stuff to do. I've seen them dissed in several places, including Schaefer's article, and I don't think that's fair.
Well, what's interesting is, I really like their wood journals.
Yeah.
And they have one that's got an inlay of the outline of the state of Minnesota in it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I look at that and I think, geez, I'd like that for my iPad mini as a case.
I didn't read the Schaefer article all the way through. Did they take a shot at Woodchuck?
Took a shot at.
Oh, jeez, that's no fair.
At the end.
Yeah, by no means do I want to say that. They don't.
I'll tell you a really quick Woodchuck story. They gave me a veneer for the lid of a MacBook, and I applied it. I put it on. Actually, they put it on, and within a day, it started peeling off. And I did a post. Woodchuck is crap. Don't buy their stuff. They went into action, figured out what they had done wrong. They had made a mistake in the application process. They pointed that out to me, came over to St. Paul, to my local coffee shop, applied another veneer, did this correctly, apologized, basically owned up to their earlier mistake, and that veneer worked perfectly, and I have been their tireless admirers ever since.
Okay, so I'm reading the end of their article. Gee, Lee, get the bug out of your ass.
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, no, it's will it become the next Medtronic? No.
Well, that's not their intention.
I don't really think that's their plan.
Yeah. Woodchuck makes wooden cases, accessory cases, and They're not going to make a case that maybe acts as a defibrillator.
I don't think I want to walk around with a wood covered flask implanted in my chest.
Exactly.
Well, it looks like most of the stuff that they do make are things like, like money clips and coasters and luggage tags and stuff like that. I mean, part of their business is making cases for technology.
Yeah.
But again, I'm largely talking about their back end technology. They make all their stuff on the premises, And I'd really like to see Lee Schaefer go in there and try to make one of those using their machines. I don't think he'd get very far. It's very, very sophisticated stuff.
I think those comments like that always strike me as, you know, you're not going into this with the right level of expectation. I mean, if you're going into a startup place like, you know, beta.mn or mini demo and expecting that every one of those people there thinks that their product is going to be the next large company like Lego or Apple or Medtronic. I mean, you're going in with the wrong expectations. These are businesses. Right. These are small businesses, or there could be small businesses that continue to generate revenue and drive the economy. Are they doing it all by themselves? No, but a whole gob of them are doing it together. So, you know, change your expectations just a little bit.
So let me ask you this, Julio, about that is, you know, there used to be a journalism 101 rule of thumb, which of course are usually crap. But the rule of thumb was you can't gush in an article. You have to balance the article by saying something that's a downside.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've never heard that 101.
Well, when you're writing a column, though, you're supposed to take it up your opinion. That's what a column does.
Well, Schaefer's giving his opinion. He gave his opinion what he liked, what he didn't like, and as a columnist, he participated in the coin voting. I might take slight issue with that as a journalist, whether he should have done that. I went and debated him and was offered the coins and declined because as a journalist, I didn't feel it was my place to be a participant.
Yeah.
So I didn't participate, but in the blog post that I put up, I did also, like Schaefer, sort of, you know, render my opinion about the event, which was largely positive.
Well, there's a difference between reporting and there's a difference between opinion. I mean, that's why there's a, you know, back in the day, there was the editorial page. So, and I think it still exists. I haven't seen a paper for a while, so. But
yeah, that's, we can go. Go into a side discussion, and I won't, but very briefly, I'm an example of a journalist that straddles those worlds because I write, air quotes here, impartial articles, but then I also write, you know, columns and opinionated blog posts. I do both.
And I've also seen you write partial articles.
Yeah. Anyway. Ba-dum-bum. All right, so let's segue into Minnesota Cup. I got to tell you, I was really pleased to see Astro HQ win the Minnesota Cup. And the category, so they got $80,000. It's really, really a cool product. And somebody put in the show notes here.
That was me.
The question, what impact does the introduction of the Apple Pencil and iPad Pro have on the business model of AstroPad? I think it just validates it. And you have to have an iPad Pro to use the stylus or not.
Yes.
Yeah. See, that's what I thought. Because there was some debate about that. People were saying, no, you can use it with the new iPhone and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no. But the big thing about the AstroPad is that, you know, it's a pad that can act in and of itself, you know, as a standalone device.
It's not a standalone. It marries with.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Is that
so
it connects?
You're basically using it as a giant touchpad, right? Isn't that what that is? I mean, because you're basically drawing on the iPad but seeing the results on another monitor. I
can't. Correct. No, on your Mac.
What Astro HQ is the fundamentally doing is getting around the limitation of Macs not having touchscreens. Surface Pro has a touchscreen, so you don't need something like this. This this is for people who are lusting after a Wacom Cintiq graphics tablet that costs a crap ton of money. they can't afford it. So the next best thing is an iPad with the software, which is crazy cheap. You have the iPad, you have a stylus, and then you're kind of drawing on it while you're using your iMac screen for reference. It's crazy cool stuff.
It is very cool stuff. Don't get me wrong. I think it's great stuff. And just to be clear, I believe crap ton is anything over $50,000. Isn't that right? I'm not
really sure. I think that is the definition.
But I just want to get that straight. But I'm just kind of curious as to how does this affect their business model? I mean, are the guys at Astro HQ and AstroPad kind of slapping their head and going, don't?
If you had read Julio's article, you'd see that ridiculously excited about it.
No, I had actually had a conversation with one of the co-founders about this yesterday for a blog post that has not yet gone out, but will probably go up this morning. They're basically doing high fives all over the place because their product was kind of cool with the current crop of iPads, but kind of clunky because A, the iPads are a little small, and they depend on third party styluses or styli that aren't necessarily all that great. Their business model just got validated in a incredibly dramatic way because now there's this huge iPad which is going to make a fantastic graphics tablet with a stylus that is designed by Apple to work with its tablet. And so they now have the dream hardware upon which to continue improving and developing their product. So they sort of anticipated this. They anticipated that there would be an Apple stylus, there would be a more sophisticated iPad, and they've been positioning themselves for this. What they told me is that they're surprised it came this quickly, came this soon, but they anticipated this, prepared for this, and now they're going to take full advantage of it because now they've gone to warp speed and they're going to do some crazy stuff.
Cool.
Nice. Cool.
Well, congratulations to them. It's also nice to see somebody from the technology division that actually won the whole shooting match. So that's
yes,
very nice.
That's why they got 80 grand. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about some other new startups, new companies that are actually moving into the Twin Cities area. Julio,
DoorDash.
You've got DoorDash, which is another food delivery service. Tell us a little bit about that.
DoorDash is a little bit like Postmates in that if you're at home and you're busy or you're lazy and you have you're desperate for Taco Bell or Brasa or something like that, you place your order on their website and then one of their contract drivers will then go fetch the item at the establishment and bring it to you. It's very simple. DoorDash though is very restaurant focus. They're just doing restaurants, where Postmates is a little broader. Like if you want a tube of toothpaste or a iPhone charging cable or something, they'll go fetch that for you too. So DoorMates is a little bit more like a couple of other players in town, Grubhub and Bite Squad. Bite Squad's a local company,
right?
That are also restaurant focused. So it's becoming a little cluttered and crowded. There's a lot of these companies jostling for, you know, roughly the same kind of business for people that are at home or at their offices.
Well, and then you've got Uber getting in the game.
Uber reportedly getting into the game. And then I wrote a story a while ago where you can now in some scenarios place orders via Google. Google has a mechanism where they plug into a local delivery infrastructure, and you can place orders through Google as well. So there are a lot of options. The downside with all of these services, including DoorDash, is you pay a little bit of a premium for this convenience. So delivery charges on the order of, you know, $5 or more, and which makes me say, you know, I'd rather save $5 and just drive over to Punch Pizza and get my pizza myself. But apparently these businesses are doing well enough that, you know, there's a place for them. And I talked to the local DoorDash general manager, who happens to be a St. Paul native, very nice guy.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so, and then another video firm opening up, Illos.
Yeah, Illos. Is that right? Yeah, Illos actually has been around for a little while.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wrote a story about them a few months ago. Illos is trying to solve a thorny problem, which is it helps people make screencasting very easy. There's screencasting software out there that's very complicated and very confusing. And for people that don't want to deal with that learning curve, but they just want to make quick software walkthroughs or other kinds of screencasts, Illos has created a web-based service where you make your screencast right on right in your browser with your computer's camera, and they've done a very nice job. It's very easy to use, and all of your screencasts get archived on their servers, but then you can export them to other places like YouTube. And they're right in Lower Town, right here in St. Paul in Lower Town. just a short stroll from my office here, and they're a very enthusiastic bunch of people. Apparently, the co-founders are former accounting majors at St. Thomas. They didn't want to go into accounting, as a couple of stories have noted, and they sort of branched out into doing a tech startup. And they seem to be having a ton of fun, and they seem to be doing really well. They're lining up some local Fortune 500 customers and so forth. It's a cool story.
Boy, this is a tough game, though.
Yeah.
A successful entrepreneur, three-time entrepreneur in the Bay Area that I knew. I was the tech advisor to his company, Faculté, and they raised, I don't know, $8 million or something, and they never got that going. But, you know, there's several companies in the space like Screencast-O-Matic and, you know, the Camtasia tool that you talked about, which is really, you didn't say Camtasia, but that's the one that's the most popular and the most complicated. But the company TechSmith has an online screencasting tool, and there's like 10 others. And
there are a lot of them.
Tough space.
There are a lot of them. I did a quick survey. I kind of checked out the competition. And you are right. ILOS has a challenge to succeed. But I'll venture to say their product is right up there. It's probably if not the best, is one of the best for people that want a tool that's crazy, that's super simple to use.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Cool. Great. Well, listen, before we, you know, obviously one of the big tech stories of the week was the Apple event. And we want to definitely talk about that in depth, and Julio will all also, you know, weigh in on some of those sorts of things. But before we leave, the local, you know, the more Minnesota-based stuff, we do have a guest to talk to that is actually undertaking the project of telling the story of Minnesota Tech. And so let's get Nick Roseth on with us. Nick works with SWAT Solutions. He's, I believe, a co-founder there. And has spent 16 years in the digital space, and has gotten together with some folks and put together a Kickstarter campaign to tell the story of the thriving technology community here in Minneapolis or in the Twin Cities. So please join us in welcoming Nick Roseth to the show. Hi, Nick.
Hey, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. This is Steve, and then we have Julio and Phil and Tim on.
Excellent.
So tell us about Documentary.
Yeah, so Documentary is a project to really highlight all of the great things that we've got going on in our Minnesota technology scene. We're a fastest growing tech community in the country, and we're just not doing a great job of telling our story. And really the purpose of the project is to help our community grow in the technology space by making sure that we retain our best resources and have, you know, attract new resources from out of state so that we can continue on our path of innovation and growth in the tech community.
So you've launched a Kickstarter campaign. It's there's 26 days left to go. You've got a modest goal of $10,000 to get things rolling, and you've got 34 backers and sitting at about $3,000. So are you feeling good about that?
Yeah, I think it's been going pretty well here. I think we've got a good amount of time left, so I'm feeling good with where we are. I'd love to go, you know, as far as we can, you know, past that goal. I'm also going to be looking for, you know, additional funding from, you know, sponsors and that kind of stuff from companies in town to really help, you know, create a bit of a larger budget than just the 10 that's on Kickstarter now, so that we can really try to get some great production value and kind of create more of an ongoing series. The project right now is for something that kind of has a start and an end. But ideally, down the road, we're able to continue to fund this and continue telling stories of all the great reasons to live and work in Minnesota, and some of the great startups and even, you know, bigger corporation stories of what we have in tech.
And where did this inspiration come from to do this?
So it actually happened at a couple of different events here in town. So one was called the Tech Cities. So Tech Cities was put on by the Carlson School and MHTA, and they had LinkedIn come in with some numbers that were really interesting. It was actually putting values to this phenomena that we know in Twin Cities that is, it's difficult to find talent. So we're all feeling the squeeze, but LinkedIn had actual figures. So it was numbers of what are we importing and what are we exporting? And it had, you know, statistics like 2-to-1 loss to, you know, to California. And so that kind of, you know, struck a chord with me of something I've seen for years and we all know about. And a couple weeks later was Minibar. There was a great conversation. I know Phil was there. I'm sure that maybe a couple of other folks were there on this podcast. It was a great conversation about the brand that we have as a community. And so there was kind of this movement towards pushing the North brand. And it was a very lively conversation. And somebody said, I know Phil talks about, hey, we're doing really great stuff. We just got to keep going. And somebody had mentioned that we're just not telling our story very well. And so that really kind of struck a nerve with me. And I literally woke up the next morning with this idea to help tell that story in a very visual, impactful way, is to do that through a documentary, to talk to people in the community and have them tell our story. Because I see great inspiring leaders in technology on a pretty regular basis. So I wanted to take that inspiration that they bring to me, and I want to scale that so that we can bring that to everything from anybody living inside the state or outside of the state to at early education, high schools and colleges. This is a great way to tell our story of tech that people don't know about. You don't have to look at other markets to go build a great tech career. You can do that right here in Minnesota.
Well, so you know, once the documentary is put together, it's produced and ready to go, where do you see that? What are the outlets to get the story out? I mean, beyond, you know, showing the documentary in the people in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities look at it, you know, see their friends, wave, say hi, that sort of thing, and you know, just feel really good about themselves. Where does it go from there, Nick?
Sure. So part of the what I've been doing for the past few months is trying to establish relationships with some organizations here in town. So so groups like MHTA, Greater MSP, and other kind of, you know, state type of driven organizations, either in tech or just economic development in Minnesota, I want to establish good relationships with them so that they can help take this message to the world. So it's a web-based community asset. So it'll be a website that has a full 30-minute documentary with a really kind of creates the story arc. And it talks about everything from our history in tech to a lot of the cool stuff we've got going on right now, for everything from small startups to medium size to large companies. And then all the other great reasons why it's so great to have a tech career and live in Minnesota. So everything from our beer culture to our great biking scene, to arts and culture, really telling the full story about that. And then after that, you have 5 to 10 minute segments on specific stories. So these might be some stories in the community, might be stories, you know, particularly going a little bit deeper into our beer community, but kind of an ongoing thing. And I want to really help see that available to everybody. So establishing partnerships with school districts or colleges so that they and then take that asset and help, you know, spread the word of technology community in their schools. And then also, you know, groups like Greater MSP to help try to export that message. And maybe there's opportunity to start playing this in other markets or at events or those kinds of things to help spread the word, not only inside of Minnesota, but outside of.
So, you know, we were talking a little bit about this off air, and we were, you know, talking about the trailer, which is up on the Kickstarter page. Not a lot of talk about the larger companies, like, and especially MedTech and that sort of thing. It seems very cocoa focused and, you know, very small startup focused, at least in the trailer, which I think is fine. And, you know, it makes, I think everybody on this podcast, we feel very at home in that situation, but that's really not the entire tech story. So it's good to hear that you were talking about the history of technology in the Twin Cities. Will there be more of a broader focus, or will it be on the smaller size tech firms?
No, it's absolutely telling the story in the entire ecosystem. So, so I would love to have conversations with some of the larger companies here in town that have been innovators for many years, and listen to and try to tell the story of some of the things that they're doing. The key, you know, is the right storyteller and the right story to tell. And a lot of these bigger companies do have those stories as well. And in the trailer, what I have is what was immediately accessible and me trying to get this thing as quickly put together as I can. And those were some of the folks that were just immediately available. I think that when you know, with having this trailer, it is a lot easier to go and have conversations with some of these larger organizations to go and say, hey, you guys are part of this story too. I want to tell the story of the whole ecosystem. So it's not just going to be some of the small startups. It really is going to include some of the larger stories of bigger companies, because we have a great history there. And I think that's really important for us to tell. And Scott Lipman talks about it in the trailer of that nobody knows about these stories. And, you know, I would love to have a 5 to 10 minute segment about the history of technology. And there's some great people here in Minnesota that have a lot of that knowledge to give to the world, and some of those are going to be at larger companies. So definitely it's the entire ecosystem, everything from small to big.
Well, you know what's really interesting about that is that I remember going in and having a tour at one of 3M's labs when I was with Apple back in the late 90s. And, you know, you have to check your phone at the door, even though at that time, I don't know, I had a Trio or something, but it had a camera in it. And it was, I mean, you just had to leave everything behind. And so there was some really, really terrific stuff that was going on. But then there was a lot of stuff that they wouldn't talk about because they would, in fact, be revealing their competitive advantages. And so it's sometimes really hard to get big companies to talk about some of the cool stuff they're working on.
And to that point, I've had some great conversations with folks that actually, you know, do have a very much a historical perspective on this. And what a lot of people don't understand is if we go back to post-war, we were a major technology hub in this country. And a lot of that was classified because it was based on defense. So companies like Honeywell were developing stuff, and somebody would go to their job and they couldn't even come home and tell their kids about it. Yeah. So there's a very rich history. It just hasn't been, you know, distributed throughout the generations because it really couldn't. And so now we're able to tell some more of those stories, you know, this about technology in Minnesota that a lot of people don't know.
So it's a Kickstarter campaign. Tell people how they can get involved and what kind of levels we're talking about.
So. Absolutely. So on our Kickstarter, there are a variety of different levels, everything from a dollar on up to I think that we got a couple grand out there. The popular ones seem to be in the $25 and $50 or $100 range. You know, and you can get things like a T-shirt and that kind of stuff, and you know, your name in the credits and that kind of stuff, because we want to show, you know, a little bit of our Minnesota technology nerd cred here, and being a part of backing a community project like this. You can go to Kickstarter and just Google or search for Documentary. Otherwise, you can go to www.documentary.com, and that'll have a link to the Kickstarter as well.
Yep, we'll put links in the show notes for everybody.
Sounds great. So you gotta make sure you get a starring role for Steve Borsch in this. You know, he's the founder of Minnovate and you know, the genius behind podcasting as we know it in the Twin Cities. So,
and I just need to mention in passing that your trailer is very slickly done. Your videographer has done superb visual work, and I was happy to see a buddy of mine in there, Chip Pearson I just drew a blank on his name. Jam Software, they do a Bushel and Casper and that sort of thing. He lives a couple of blocks from my house. Really good guy. That was a good choice for somebody to interview.
Yeah, Chip is, you know, kind of. This definitely is not something of my own creation. I've had fantastic conversations with Chip Pearson, Casey Allen, who's also in the project, and a lot of other people that aren't in the film right now, but have fantastic conversations. And a lot of people are just so incredibly passionate about this community. I mean, you guys are included definitely in that, in getting out there, telling our story, talking about what we've got going on. Like the tech.mn is doing a great job of kind of up to the minute. You know, they're everywhere in the community, and they're telling this story as it's coming in live. And it's great to see that you guys are doing that as well. And the thing that we've got is, if you're in this community, you know a lot about it. And if you go to Mini Demo, you know how awesome it is. But if you don't go to Mini Demo, you don't really see the magic that's happening in this town and what is really, you know, the trajectory of what it looked like 5 years ago versus what it looks like today. And we're creating the companies that are going to really kind of continue to innovate in this town for the next 20 years. So it's really cool to see all these organizations doing that and being a part of the story. And I'd love to, you know, continue to highlight those organizations as well.
Nick, could I, and I'm going to make one suggestion for your documentary. One thing you might want to include, at least to a very small degree, is the intersection of tech and geekery. Like Chip is a good example of somebody who's huge sci-fi geek, and many of the people in your documentary are like that. And there's a very powerful undercurrent of non-tech geekery in town. And if you added just a little bit of that flavor to your documentary, I think that would be a good thing.
Excellent. Yes, that's a great point.
And also makers too. There's a lot of maker community that either started here or is flourishing here.
And puppies. You should have more puppies.
That's great. And we can highlight the International Cat Film Festival.
There you go.
There you go.
Cats, yeah. Nick, listen, thanks very much. I appreciate you taking some time and joining us on the podcast today. And, you know, we'll keep checking in with us, see how things are going, and good luck with the Kickstarter campaign. And check out the link on our page so you can find out more.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Nick. Take care. Nick,
take care, brother.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
All right.
Puppies. I'm telling you can't go wrong with puppies.
No. No, you can't. Always true. A good thing.
It's true. All right. So, you know, Steve, you've been waiting to talk about it. I know Julio has been waiting to talk about it. You know, it's another trip to the Mount there in California to see.
And I just ordered this morning at 5:20 a.m. my iPhone 6S Plus. So
you're getting that in rose gold, are you? So
not getting it in rose gold.
Or as most people call it, pink.
Yeah, pink. Not only am I not getting it in rose gold, I'm not going to get it until probably the 20th of October.
Probably.
Oh, dear.
See, I should have been up at 2 a.m. No. Oh, well.
You can't just walk into a store and buy one?
Yeah, I probably could.
Well, that's no fun, though.
No, but, yeah. My experience has been, although they probably made a bazillion of them because, you know, the changes aren't that dramatic. Right. So maybe I can go to the store and just say, hey, I ordered this, but I want to buy it.
I'm sure you
cancel the order.
Probably.
We'll take care.
Well, I put the lineup in here on purpose because this was the way that I thought that were the most interesting products, not necessarily the most impactful or disruptive products, because I think the Apple TV is probably that. But the iPad Pro with that Apple Pencil, I think, is
and the Microsoft Surface keyboard.
Yeah, it's the most interesting right, thing and most unexpected thing that we saw there, even though everyone expected this large iPad.
Yeah, I'm a huge Apple geek, but I also love Surface computers. I think they're great. I use one, and I was struck by how Surface-like this all is. Tim Cook, you will recall, just 2 years ago was making fun of the PC world that, you know, tries to mix tablets and computers, and he thought that was really goofy. And way back when, Steve Jobs made fun of styluses and said nobody wanted to use that. And everything has come full circle, and now Apple is releasing a Surface PC, which is fascinating. I haven't gotten my hands on the hardware, but the add-on keyboard, it's basically a keyboard case. The iPad Pro obviously does not have a kickstand, so this is more of a keyboard origami-like keyboard case scenario with keys that are sort of covered by a fabric, which is something, again, Microsoft has done, and Logitech and some others have done that. And if executed properly, and apparently the keys have the same mechanism as the keys on the new MacBook, if this is executed properly, it should be a good typing experience, and the fabric is great for spills and so forth. So I'm kind of excited about that, because I've always been a proponent of using iPads for productivity, but there have been some problems trying to marry keyboards to iPads with Bluetooth I've always found that to be extremely flaky, to the point I just got frustrated and kind of gave up. So this keyboard links to the iPad physically, just like a Surface cover to a Surface computer. So that if that's gonna be really good, and the pencil stylus also looks very, very interesting.
So did you think you'd ever see a day where you would have Apple at an Apple event and a Microsoft representative walk out on stage and have the big logo up?
That was amazing.
It was like, holy crap.
Yeah, well, no, but that and office.
You could hear Steve sort of spinning in his grave.
And then I really liked on the big screen the guest appearance, Bill Gates guest appearance. That was great too.
Well, that office demo on the iPad Pro was very compelling. It Office looks really good on this thing.
No yes. Kidding.
Yeah, well, yeah.
We all thought it would at some point. It's just a matter of, come on, guys, can't we all just get along?
It looks better than it does on the Surface. I mean, you can run full-on Office on the Surface, a regular Office, but they don't really have a touch version of Office.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Oh, they do. Oh, okay.
They do. Yeah, I use Touch Word on the Surface, and it's really good. But Microsoft has been very extreme. The Steve Ballmer days are long gone. Microsoft is 100% agnostic in terms of platforms. It's developing on all platforms with equal aggressiveness, to the point where many times its innovations come to non-Microsoft platforms first. And Office for iOS is a good example of that. They're running full bore on that, and the current version of Office for iOS, I reviewed that for Tidbits, is excellent. It's very, very good. And as we saw during this recent keynote, they've made tweaks, adjustments, and they've added features that are very iPad Pro and Pencil specific. And I can't render an opinion without using it, but at least on the demo, it looked very, very slick.
Well, I've had an Donut Jot for a long time, which is probably one of the easiest to use normal styluses for the iPad, and I just have to laugh that I've now lost my second one. I literally can't find the damn thing anywhere.
And don't buy another one. Get one of these pencils.
There you go.
But also, I think that Apple will probably have some case that you'll be able to, keep it in the case. I just keep misplacing the doggone thing. Of course, I have three briefcases, so that's kind of a crazy maker. But the pencil looks really, really good. I mean, even, I noticed that they had a disclaimer: artistic talent not included, as they were doing the video.
So it's not for me.
Well, but in all seriousness, I if you do anything at all with writing or like for me with the Adonit, what I was doing a lot was using my iPad as a drawing tool, so I could sketch stuff out when I'm talking to somebody. So here's the database, and then this connects to that, and then this connects to that, and so forth, doing a little flow chart and stuff like that's really useful. But the Adonit still had limitations, and especially when you would put your hand down, you'd have to physically make part of the screen not touch ready, so you could have your wrist on there, and it was just a pain. I mean, it's just
the pencil and the iPad Pro working together have that feature where
precisely.
If you're working with the pencil, the rest of the screen is not touch sensitive, and it has features let you find on high end graphics devices, like if you tilt as you're writing or drawing, if you tilt the thing, the output on the screen changes. The drawing becomes thicker.
Yep.
Or whatever. And just a little joke here. I wrote a roundup of the announcements for Next Avenue, which is a PBS affiliated website focused on an audience, 50 plus audience. So the story that I wrote for them was sort of geared towards boomers and so forth and their particular needs. And I joked in that article that the iPad Pro is going to be a great computer for boomers with the pencil, which will now, bring back the fine art of cursive handwriting.
There you go.
It might. You never know. Yeah. Well, anyone here going to buy one of these? Because I know that pretty much, what, doesn't everyone have a Mini now, an iPad Mini as their main iPad?
Well, it's funny because I getting the 6S Plus will be so huge. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to is being able to use that as my primary device. So yeah. I'm not carrying around two devices. So I am going to buy a larger iPad. I'm just uncertain if it's going to be the current big one or the new iPad Pro. I was frankly, my wife is over right now, or actually she's flying back from Europe. So during the event, she was streaming it in her hotel room, and we were on Skype chat going back and forth about what we thought about things and all that, which was actually kind of fun because normally she doesn't watch the thing live. And then I tell her about it that night and she's like, whatever. This time she was like, oh my God, oh my God, we have to get rid of our two Apple TVs and get this new one, you know?
Yeah.
And then she's saying, oh, I got to get that new phone now. And blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh, great. Now
is she going to also get one of those Hermes straps for the Apple Watch?
I don't. She didn't say anything about that.
Did they put a price on that, by the way? I didn't know.
It's going to be expensive, whatever
it is. Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. But I was blown away by what I thought was really reasonable pricing on the iPad Pro. I thought they should have just done one Apple TV at $199.
My question on the Apple TV, because I think this is the most disruptive product that they have now, just in a long
time. So why do you say this is disruptive? Why is this so much different than
a TV OS, right, Tim?
Well, I think it's because the App Store now is open. And if you saw that MLB demo, I mean, that was unbelievable. You could watch live baseball and get live stats on screen. You can do two games at once, all sorts of stuff. That's just a taste of what other developers are going to do with this. So they're going to make this the must-have box for the TV. Plus, you've got gaming.
Well, yeah,
that technology, you know, building apps is already available with Google TV, or excuse me, Android TV. That's also available. I hate to say it out loud, Fire TV. I mean, you can build apps for all of those things. Nobody's building anything.
But here's the kicker. The kicker is the integration is so much better on iOS devices and the Apple TV than it is on Android devices with, any Android based TV experience.
Well, I think it's the right step for Apple. I think it's moving forward. I don't think it's disruptive.
Well, I think it's disruptive. I think the app thing is cool, but I will tell you based on the Roku thing that there's a lot of crap out there. So hopefully the apps will be halfway decent, I started watching, never read the graphic novel, but I started watching The Walking Dead on the very first show and got hooked. And so I've watched every one of them, and I watched Talking Dead afterwards, and also have occasionally done the two-screen experience where you can actually on your laptop or your iPad or whatever, you can pull up their website and you can do the two-screen experience. And, you know, it's stupid and kind of goofy, but it's really awesome. And I remember during the last presidential election, how MSNBC had done this really fabulous app where you could watch TV live in a corner of it, and you had all of the stats wrapped around it. And I began to think about that when I saw the Apple TV, because that was revolutionary. You could drill into any state, any candidate, anything, and you could pull up all the data happening in real time as it came in. And while you're watching things happening live. And so I thought about this with TVOS and apps. I thought this potentially could fundamentally change the connection experience that you have while you're watching TV.
Because the secondary screen is right up on your TV.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like picture in picture. That's revolutionary.
Well, the question that I have.
Come on, Phil, be visionary.
So the question I have, they have two different sizes of 32 and a 64 gig. Why do they do that? Because 32 seems like that's plenty, especially since you're not going to have 200 apps on your Apple TV like you have on your phones.
Some apps are very storage intensive.
Maybe games.
Yeah, games are a good example in many cases where you have to download a I will use the word again, a crap ton of stuff for to get the full experience. So
that's over 50,000 apps then, right? So a crap ton in.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what I saw though too is, so for example, being an Xfinity customer, there's an Xfinity app and there are certain movies that you can download directly to your iPad or iPhone.
Yes.
And same thing on the Android device. And so when I looked at the storage when they said the storage, I said, well, yeah, you know, apps are going to take up some space depending on what they have. But also what if an Xfinity app, for example, you could schedule downloads to happen after midnight. So you go to bed and it downloads a couple of movies.
Don't hold your breath.
Comcast
is going to see it as a direct competition to his X1. So I predict we're not going to see a whole lot of movement there.
Yeah.
And each app has a sandbox that's only 200 megabytes large. So
I did not see that.
Yeah. So you're not going to see gigabyte downloads.
Got it.
So I think this is a streaming box. It's not a download box. Maybe they'll let you download some of your music or all of your music. I don't know. But
It's
interesting. So I think that there's stuff that they've envisioned for the future that they, you know, haven't released yet that will make that make sense.
And the Apple TV has potential as a gaming console, because as we all know, casual gaming on iOS devices has been extremely popular. It's been very, very big.
Yeah.
So that you can extrapolate to the Apple TV and speculate that that will also happen on this device. Some people don't think that's going to be the case, and their argument is, you know, the Apple TV is kind of a pathetic competitor to the Xbox One and PlayStation 4. And the response to that is, it's not the same kind of gaming. It's not the same kind of audience. It's more casual gaming. People getting the opportunity to throw their favorite iPhone or iPad games onto the TV, which they're going to jump at. And there are Xbox style controllers coming, or in fact, or already out, that will be compatible with the Apple TV, and more than one person can play at the same time. So this is going to be, you know, potentially very fun. And there's precedent, like the Fire TV has an Xbox style controller where you could do that very thing, and I've played games on the Fire. The problem is there's not a lot of excitement for creating content for the Fire TV, but there very likely will be for the Apple TV.
Yeah.
Okay, so
we'll see who's right. Phil, you're on the opposite side.
That's all right. I think it's very progressive. I don't think it's disruptive. I think it's a natural evolution. So, I mean, it's not the iPhone, for God's sake. This is TV.
I agree 100% with Phil. It's not disruptive in the least. Everybody and his grandmother has already done all of this. Apple is just putting its own spin on it, just like the iPad Pro is nothing new, you know, stylus, Surface keyboard. The Apple TV is exactly the same thing. The Siri voice integration with the remote, Comcast has done that. Amazon has done that. Apps, Google has done that. Nothing about it is new, or to use the word we're using here, disruptive. It's just the polished Apple spin on the whole situation.
Well, it is. I mean, it's disruptive if you own Apple stock, right, Steve? It's just, you got to call everything disruptive if you've got Apple stock. So,
well, I don't think the 6S and the 6S Plus are disruptive, but the new phones are nice. The camera
Before we bail out of the TV, I just want to know, where is my integration with Home, connected Home?
You know, maybe that was really...
I said, now that's disruptive, I'm telling you.
I think this is the seeds of disruption are in there.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to have to go back and reorder that Echo again.
Yeah, there you go.
No.
I was surprised that they didn't say anything at all about HomeKit.
Nope,
for interactive stuff. Well, I held off buying the SmartThings version 2.0 hub.
So you were
specifically, I wanted to see what happened, and then now I'll go out and buy it. But
so anyway, you were talking about the 6S and the 6S Plus, or the 6 Plus S.
Yeah.
Or the, tell me, you were going to talk about the camera.
I mean, it's got some neat features in the camera. And in fact, I was going to do a security tip, but we don't have time anymore. And it's about the camera is so good that this security blog that I follow, Graham Cluley is the guy's name. Isn't that, that the greatest name, by the way, for a security guy?
Cluley.
Cluley. Yes. Anyway, he talks about visual hacking and the iPhone 6S's new camera and, yep, and what a big concern it is. And I know I often will see people that leave their credit cards out on the table at a restaurant. And, you know, you can just walk by and snap a picture. And I've thought about this for a long time, and I've even said to people that I'm with, tuck your card in. Why? Well, because now it's face up, and then it comes back, and maybe it's face down or the other way around, and somebody grabs a picture of both sides. Now they have your card number and your three-digit code from the back. You're screwed.
Well, if you're using American Express, that code is right on the front. So it's
right on the front.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. That's true. And so the camera, right, though, is really pretty cool. And there, then, Julio, you did an article, too, about stylish Apple tech from local firms, and you had Pat and Quill in there. And one of my favorites that I still haven't done is Colorware down in Winona.
Yeah.
That will paint your device. Here you have a picture of a bunch of MacBooks. Their stuff is just stunning. Have you seen any of those in person? Because I have. And
yeah.
Oh my God, the quality is incredible.
Yeah, Colorware is an interesting. You just imagine a super high end, super sophisticated spray painting shop for fancy sports cars. Except it's not sports cars; it's Apple gadgets and so forth. So they have this whole facility with a whole series of spray painting rooms where they meticulously take apart the devices, paint the exteriors, and reassemble everything. And it's the same device, just completely different colors. Very high-end operation. They were very secretive for a long time, and they wouldn't allow me on the premises. And then for some reason, they changed their minds. And I went down there and reported and shot a bunch of video. And they're an amazing company in a very unusual location, Winona. And I'm a big fan. The stuff they do is flawless. It's absolutely flawless. You do pay a premium for it, but it's remarkably well done. And they just added the new MacBook to their repertoire.
Right,
got it.
Yeah,
well, Pat and Quill doing a lot of the leather work, and then there's
Pat
also,
and Quill is another interesting company there in Northeast Minneapolis, and they started by copying a Silicon Valley company that does these cases that have you encase your iPad in a wood frame, and then it's covered with a book like cover. That's not new. Other people have done that, but now they're branching out into Apple accessories, watch bands, stands. They're doing high end leather bags. Really, 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 really high end stuff. Of a very interesting company that I followed for some time.
Cool.
Well, let's segue, because we're going to have to wrap up the show here, kids. Let's segue into our cool thing of the week. And I think we should start with Julio. So what's your cool thing of the week there, young man?
The cool thing of the week I'm wearing on my wrist right now, we just talked about Pat and Quill. I borrowed one of their leather watch bands. And very, very nice. It's beautiful. There's a million third-party watch bands for the Apple Watch. And many of them are inexpensive. And as a result, they're kind of crappy. I mean, there's just an explosion of watch bands, but this is a very nice one. Not super cheap, but it's less expensive than some of the higher-end Apple watch bands. So if you're looking to accessorize your Apple Watch, Pat and Quill is definitely worth a look. It's a very, very beautiful high-end leather kind of a situation, and I'm very happy with it.
Great. And it's only $90.
What a bargain.
Not cheap, but very nice. Very nice.
And it's made, they're made here, right?
No, they, their leather stuff is done in Mexico, I believe. They have a relationship with a manufacturer down there.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Cool. All right, Tim.
Well, Star Wars is coming out later this year, and just last week, I think on Friday, it was a week ago Friday, the BB-8, Sphero BB-8 toy came out, and I have to say that it's a little pricey at $150, but everyone that has one that I know, including my son, who just got one yesterday,
oh, really?
Says it is the coolest thing ever.
Really?
Yep. Wow. So
I'm going to get one too.
Yeah, 150, little pricey.
Did we talk about that last week? Didn't we talk about the Sphere?
Well, we did.
Yeah,
we did.
That's right.
But it's actually out.
It could still be a cool thing the week, can it?
Of course it can be. Of course it can be.
Tell your son I'll be right over.
Yeah. Well, he's in Washington, D.C., so it'll, you know, I'll have to fly out.
Yeah.
Phil?
Well, this is something everybody needs because it's a problem that has been looking for a solution for years. For years. You know, the art, the game that is beer pong has always had one drawback, that the ping pong ball, once it hits the dirty floor in your basement, tends to pollute the beer for the rest of the game.
Oh, sure.
So this, my friends, is a revolution. This is disruptive. This is the slip cup.
So what does it do, damn it?
This is an insert that goes into your beer glass, so the actual ping pong ball never really touches the beer.
Oh, sure.
It's flipping brilliant.
And then you just take it out.
Interesting.
There you go. See? And then just so you pull out the slip cup and drink the beer.
That's cool.
Wow.
That's very cool.
It's a cool thing. No, disruptive, don't you think?
It is very.
Yeah.
We'll have to see when this comes out.
And now, Steve, what's your one cool thing?
Well, my one cool thing is actually a website section.
Which is not fair.
No. Come on. Let me finish.
You're supposed to pick a thing,
let
not
me
a
finish.
Place where you can get things.
I know. But okay. And so my daughter sent me a link to a bag, actually, that she said, hey, what do you think of this bag? And I followed the link, and it was to this site called The Grommet, which I'd never heard about before.
Really?
And yeah, I'm usually on top of stuff. Things. No, I swear to God. Well, you know,
I heard about this a long time ago.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a big shopper online, but they have a whole tech gadgets and tools section.
Where do you think all these things are coming from that we're spitting out?
Places
like this, Steven, you're basically giving it away.
I am. But oh my God, was it? I mean, I looked on here and I just started scrolling down and said about 80% of the stuff I've never seen before. Just incredible.
Well, it's sort of like Quirky. I mean, you know, the quality here looks a little bit better than Quirky, and it's a slightly higher priced, I guess, but it's the same kind of thing. It's very,
it's kind of like SkyMall. It's really
very niche stuff.
Yeah, you know? It is. It's
like
narrow.
Like I could see Steve getting all over these Bui tags, which are like little tags for your Apple cable, so you could put his name and his phone number on his headset.
Yeah, exactly.
In case someone found it.
Or the charging wallet, or you know, something like that.
How anal do you think I am?
Pretty anal.
Thanks for the vote of confidence. Damn it.
They're only $12. Come on.
Yeah.
Get on it.
All right.
It's a little bit like the ThinkGeeks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and ThinkGeeks fun, but this was pretty amazing. Anyway, so I think we're pretty well done because we've talked about all the events coming up already.
Yeah, I think
we'll still have a bunch of upcoming events in the show notes. People should take a look.
Stuff to do next week, and we'll talk about it on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Thanks, Julio.
Yep, thank you, Julio.